Thanks so much for coming to the session and for your patience. Can everybody hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, terrific. So as you can see, this is the cover of the book, Cool Jew, The Ultimate Guide for Every Member of the Tribe. And this session is an exploration of what took place before I wrote the book and how I came to the idea and what the book is about. And you'll see as we go through this that it's really an exploration of contemporary Jewish culture and its many different facets. If you have any questions, if you could please hold them to the end of the session, that would be great. So you can see here, this is the cover of the book, as I said, and as many of you probably already know. You can see the Cool Jew logo right on the cover there is a riff on rap culture, and I've been asked why did I choose that, and in many ways it's reflective of not just the fusion that we're going to be talking about between American pop culture and Jewish culture, but also because in our own tradition as Jews, we have a history of what you could call bling. So if you think about it, and I'm actually happy to ask any of you if you have any suggestions, what do you think Jewish bling is? Jewish bling. Okay, cool. So that's more like conventional bling, but Jewish bling, besides the over-the-top enthusiasm. There are still a couple seats, David, if needed. Okay. And if you think about every Shabbat or every Chag, when the Aron is opened and we see the Torah with the breastplate and the crowns and the pointer, Jewish bling. In antiquity, the Kohen Gadol wore a little, someone here knows the name, which is blanking me. It was a little piece of gold, like around the turban, the spitz.
Seats,
that's it. And you could consider that as Jewish bling. And also in antiquity, I'm told that Jewish women wore a similar crown for Shabbat that had the skyline of Yerushalayim on it. And that's where the concept comes from of Yerushalayim Shel Zahav, that this little crown was called Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. These women embodied the concept of Jerusalem of gold. They represented Yerushalayim Shel Zahav. And in that tradition, there are Hasidic communities where women wear a tiara on Erev Shabbat, replicating that. So even though this is the official name of the book started with an alias. It has a Hebrew name, just like many of us have a Hebrew name. And my book's Hebrew name is The Heapster Handbook. So a heapster is my synonym for a cool Jew, a super Jew, someone who's really proud, informed, and connected to where they come from. And we're going to learn more about what that actually means in practice in 1 second. So over the course of many years, as in my work as a journalist, I was noticing very fun Jewish trends, novelty products, and gift items like bazooka gum in Hebrew, mashuga nuts, which are a San Francisco Bay Area product, Hebrew, the chosen beer, another San Francisco Bay Area product. Sorry about that. Okay. And this is actually the logo of the Grateful Yid, also known as Rabbi Yosef Langer of Chabad of San Francisco. And Rabbi Langer is really a character in Northern California. There's probably people here who know him from his travels. He was part of a team in the 1970s that helped construct one of the first public menorah lightings outside of Eretz Yisrael. So it's very common today that we have public menorah lightings. I saw a couple menorahs still out, Hanukkiot still out on my way here. We had one in Gilders Green and a big one down near Buckingham Palace. I was very happy to see that. And it's actually due to the efforts of Chabad, probably many of you know that in many places it became much more accepted. Now we have a Hanukkah lighting at the White House in the United States. And it's because of this willingness to take what is generally considered in many Jewish communities was a private practice, despite the tradition of putting Hanukkiot outside, was a private practice that was brought outside in the 1970s. So in some ways, you could say that this trend started then.
It also happens at number 10 Downing Street every year as well.
Lovely. Lovely. I've been practicing my terrible British accent since I got here. People tell me that I sound like Bert in Mary Poppins, but I love Bert, so I'm down with that. So you can see here in this image that Rabbi Langer standing in front of the Golden Gate Bridge. That's the famous bridge we have in San Francisco, which is actually red rather than gold. And he's holding a Hanukkiah which echoes the story that I just told you. And he's standing on a bed of roses, and you see the words Grateful Yid, which evoke the Grateful Dead, where Rabbi Langer used to come and hand out these T-shirts and hand out halot, Erev Shabbat, to give people a sense of being Jewish while they were in an atmosphere that might not feel so Jewish. And while we're talking, actually, I should tell you there is a clipboard going around. I have a newsletter that goes out. Please feel free to add your email to it. And there's a flyer there if you'd like. We're going to have another presentation tomorrow night about Heapster music that has been growing over time, and we have some surprise special guests. So I encourage you, if you enjoy this session, I hope you all will, that you'll come back again tomorrow night. Now, around the year 2000, we went from the 1970s, right, when this menorah lighting started to happen around the United States. Jump forward 30 years to around the year 2000 when Heeb magazine got started. Is anyone here familiar with Heeb? Paul, and I see some nods. If you haven't yet heard of Heeb magazine, it's a very self-deprecating, sometimes a little bitter, often funny, sometimes distasteful, depending on your opinion. But it's out there, and it's very proud, and it embraced this term that was once considered derogatory for Jews and turned it around and used as a term of pride. So around the same time that the magazine got started, we also started to see what could be called the Jewish T-shirt trend. And you started to see T-shirts with the name of the magazine, Heeb, honorary Heeb for our friends and allies, and the fake tallest shirt, which could obviously get you in trouble in some parts of Brooklyn. Now, the T-shirt trend extended to pets. It's a little difficult to read this as Shane Apunim, a pretty face in Yiddish. It also extended to apparel. The words here are bubala, mashugana, oive, chutzpah, Shane Apunim, yenta. If you're not familiar with those words, ask your neighbor. I have a feeling they might know. It also extended to jewelry. So this is a riff, like Cool Jew, the logo that we saw, is a riff on the concept of wearing our names or wearing a chai or a Magen David or even a mezuzah. There's all kinds of different Jewish bling we wear around our necks. So in this case, it's a generic. It's not your name. It's a term of endearment, mamala. This pride or fun, playfulness, creative Jewish expression, of course, extended itself to yarmulkes. Do we have a winner for the most creative yarmulke in the crowd today? Anybody? I was just in Yerushalayim, and there's this store downtown called Kippah Man. And you guys already know. Kippah Man has every possible kippah. Oh, here we go. What does that kippah say? Oh, very nice. Very nice. Lovely. This pride, expressive playfulness, was also expressed in music. So again, around the same time, we're still talking around the year 2000, we started to see either the introduction or reintroduction of inventive Jewish music, like this example, Hebrew National Kosher Classics, music that answers to a higher authority. There are songs, these are songs that were put together by different Jewish artists and issued by the Hot Dog Company. You probably don't have Hebrew National here in the UK. Oh, you do have it. So you, believe it or not, you can go onto the Hebrew National website and buy a mezuzah and a bun. There are many other examples of music that was introduced or reintroduced. This is Bagels and Bongos by the Irving Fields Trio. It came out in 1959. It was a big hit with the song Havana Nagila, which is a fusion between calypso beat and Jewish content. And I mentioned fusion earlier with the concept of bling, and it's something that we're going to be seeing again and again. It really typifies this trend. There is an organization in New York City called J-Dub Records, and they are a nonprofit. And I should show you this slide again. This was issued by Reboot Stereophonic. Reboot and J-Dub both are two nonprofits working to help promote Jewish music in the United States among people like yourselves. And Reboot actually publishes a quarterly magazine called Guilt and Pleasure. And J-Dub puts on events like concerts. Reboot puts on salons. They both have a number of initiatives. They're heavily sponsored by American philanthropists like Michael Steinhardt, one of the backers of Birthright Israel. He's a familiar name to you, I'm sure. And What's really beautiful about their work is that they are embracing Jewish images throughout and Jewish content. So this album cover, for example, you can see a golem, that robot-like figure in the center, and there's one to the right. And there is a synagogue with a Magen David at the top, and there is a cemetery tombstone in the right over where it says volume. Anybody have an idea about what these images collectively are suggesting? There's also a Lion of Judah there. Pardon? Think Europe. Exactly. So one of the bands on this CD, we're going to be actually getting a little sample of in a second, has a tie to Prague. Some of the other individuals that are represented on this label are Josh Dolgan, who is known by the stage name So-Called. Anybody here familiar with Josh Dolgan's music? He's been here before. I'm not surprised. Well, I'd like to play a little sample of his music for you. What Josh Dolgan does is he takes old beats and content from Jewish tradition, and he uses a loop player, and I'll just play it for you, and then you'll get a much better sense of what his music sounds like. Oops. It would help if I got the right music. Sorry. One second. Here we go. So this is a sample of that kind of music.
But with a new twist.
Everybody hear it? So it's like this old song we all know, but like you've never heard it before, unless you were at Fest. Got a good sense of what that sounds like? Okay. So, in addition to Josh Dolgan, there's Golem. Now, Golem is, of course, echoes back to that Prague image that we just saw. Anybody here familiar with Golem's music? Yeah? So, they were probably here too before, I'm assuming. So, Golem calls himself a punk klezmer band. Tell that they're both playing with Jewish content and contemporary sounds, right? So Josh Dolgan is Jewish content and hip-hop. Golem is Jewish content and punk or rock. It sort of sounds a little bit more like rock, I think, rather than punk, but they're very edgy when they perform, and the punk klezmer is how they usually define themselves. Here is Meshuggah Beach Party on the West Coast. So Josh Dolgan is in Canada, up in Toronto or Montreal, I think, and, pardon? And Golem is based in New York. On the West Coast, we have Meshuggah Beach Party, and you can already tell by the image here what their music might sound like. I love this one, too. I actually had a party with them in California when my book first came out, and they came like wearing, you know, Hawaiian shirts and like these fake beards and hats. It was awesome. Even the woman. So I love their music because you never thought Wipeout could sound so Jewish, right? So on the East Coast again, we have another band called the Afro-Semitic Experience. And they are like a jazz, sort of a jazz conglomeration. And you can see that their logo plays on that old joke that Jews and rappers both say oi, just rappers say it backwards. Now, this music trend was well underway by the year 2007 when the Klezmatics won the first Grammy for world music by a klezmer band. And it was, bless you. It was really an amazing thing because they used traditional klezmer music, klezmer instruments, right, and some sounds, and they blended it with Woody Guthrie's lyrics and kind of a folk song. If you go to the Klezmatics website, you can play this whole album and get a sense of what the music is like. It's really great. This trend that we've been seeing, we started with some fun products, and then we saw the right T-shirts, publications, music. We're going to take a look at a few more gift products that have been emerging over the past few years, like the Rebbe trading cards. Anybody have some of these? Yeah, there was a hand went up in the back row. This is the Bubba Verebbe. This is the Streptkova Rebbe. And what's amazing about these is that it lists their birth details on the back of the card, like a baseball card in America. It tells you, you know, what dynasty they're from and where they were from and Lo Aleinu when they were nifter, et cetera. What was that? Yeah, no chumras, no chumras. Now this trend extended to these Heroes of the Torah drinking glasses that you could trade with your friends. And to the Moses action figure, to the rabbi punching doll, and the rally rabbi bobblehead doll. This is our friend again, Rabbi Yosef Langer, San Francisco Chabad. So he is probably the only rabbi ever recruited by a major league sports team as a mascot. So he in his playfulness, agreed to allow his image to be portrayed on this bobblehead doll. And in 2007 at the Jewish Heritage Night, which is an annual event at the San Francisco Giants team, it's a baseball team, and you buy your ticket, and you get with your ticket a gift, and you sit with everybody in the Jewish section. And the ticket costs about $20, and in 2007 they gave out this doll, and now that you've seen it, you'll keep seeing it because it shows up again and again. And before the game even took place, again, the ticket was $20, includes the bobblehead doll. But it was such... There was so much excitement about the bobblehead doll, and this huge crowd turned out for that, that in advance of the event, you could buy the bobblehead doll on eBay for $50, and it is still a popular collectible today. This is from my own personal collection. It's a Curious George dreidel. Curious George, you may be surprised to know, is actually what I consider a heapster. Curious George is the brainchild of a couple. Excuse me, Margaret and Augusto Ray. Wait a second here. So Margaret and Augusto Ray were actually living in Paris before the onset of World War II, and they got wind that the Nazis were approaching. And they, very much like Curious George, which I'm sure you have here in the UK, they cobbled together two bicycles. We have one yes and one no. So... Curious George is a popular children's book figure, and now there's animated videos about him and so forth. He's just this very playful, adventurous monkey who gets into a lot of mischief and would do something like take a bunch of bicycle parts and put them together to create a working bicycle, which is what the Rays did. So they put together two bicycles, and somehow, in the dark of night, they rode over the border to Switzerland, and they escaped to safety. And in the morning, the tanks rolled in, and it would have been too late. They really got out in the nick of time. They took with them the little seed that later became Curious George, which is it's an extremely popular character in the United States. And they not only put their own experiences, this, you know, sort of midnight race across the border into George's character, they also put in another character called the man with the yellow hat who takes care of George. And the man with the yellow hat, I only learned during a presentation like this somewhere in the United States, is a composite character of all the many non-Jews, the righteous Gentiles who helped the Reis escape to safety during the Holocaust. They later made their way to Brazil and ultimately to Boston, and that's where they lived out the rest of their lives. May they rest in peace. We've seen this trend go all this way, and now it's even on bumper stickers like this. If you can't say anything nice, say it in Yiddish. It's extended to everyday items like notebooks. This one, Poe Lezion. If you read the Yiddish in the first line, it says Yiddish proletariat. Proletarier is probably a closer pronunciation. Anybody here, native Yiddish speaker, could probably pronounce it better. And it even extended to snacks like these, latke crisps and babka bites, which taste strangely like the real thing. And it extended to festivals. So we've seen gifts, music, publications, all kinds of kitsch, and music, if I didn't mention that, and of course festivals like this one, like Limud. And on the West Coast we have a big event called the Julicious Festivals, which is a lot like Limud, but for ages 18 to 26. It's a birthright feeder program. And we have classes and presentations by different artists, a big Saturday night concert, your gala, and many more sessions on Sunday. It's been going for about 10 years. It started with a blog, julicious.com, grew into a festival, grew into a Birthright Israel program. It's really an amazing celebration of Jewish culture, much like Limud. It'll be held in mid-February, one Shabbat after Limud LA. And we have many other examples. It looks like there's something wrong with the program. There was supposed to be a slide right here, so I apologize. But I know the material there that we should be seeing is a really innovative logo from an event on the East Coast called Jewsapalooza and the Oihu Music Festival. It's all put on by an organization called Downtown Arts Development, and they also put on something called the Downtown Seder, where I heard the singer Neil Sedaka sing My Yiddish Mama. It was like a model Seder at Hebrew school where many different performers sang different parts of the Seder. So there's all kinds of innovative programs, just like Limud. Not quite the same as Limud, but very similar in spirit in some ways. And then everything took this dramatic shift forward in 2005. In March of that year, when Matis Yahu came out with his first album, Matis Yahu, the reggae Hasidic superstar, he soon was on VH1 and MTV and Jimmy Kimmel Live, a very popular nighttime program in the United States, and David Letterman. Are those programs shown here in the UK?
Some.
So I guess satellite, you can get everything, or online, you could see it. And what was amazing is that Matis Yahu, as you all know probably, you know, is a totally out there Jew. He's wearing Hasidic clothing. At that time, he was very true to the, you know, wearing a hat and a long coat and ritual fringes, and there you see him. He's so out and proud about being Jewish, which is also integral to this trend. And as a journalist, I should say, my radar went up. So I did what every good journalist would do, and I started pitching articles. I'm a freelancer, so I went to my local paper. I'm from San Francisco, and that's also why I was noticing all these San Francisco trends that we've talked about so far, Rabbi Langer and Meshuggah Nuts and Hebrew the Chosen Beer. Went to the San Francisco Chronicle and pitched them a story, which they assigned to me. And I interviewed a local entrepreneur, among many other personalities. This is Sarah Lefton. And Sarah Lefton is the creator of the Yo Semite t-shirt. She took the name of a national park, Yosemite, and she added some unusual punctuation. You can get these t-shirts. You can get these t-shirts online at the Contemporary Jewish Museum of San Francisco. It's a popular item in their gift store. Sarah also took the name, the familiar phrase, I should say, of one of our favorite holidays, and she put it in a less familiar place. So then what I did was, like, as I said, like a good freelance journalist, I took this idea and I recycled it. And I pitched it to another publication, The Forward, which is based in New York, with the concept of giving the gift of kitsch for Hanukkah. And I took many of these items that we've been looking at, the fun gift products, and I ranked them in ascending order from low kitsch, one candle, to high kitsch, 8 candles. Yeah. And the panties, of course, they took top ranking. Anyways, with all of that, I realized that I had the basis of something bigger, which is this concept of a heapster. And when I came up with the idea of a Heapster handbook, I realized that that was sort of the way to convey everything that we've been talking about. These trends taking place in contemporary Jewish culture, this fusion between all these different forms of contemporary sounds and Jewish traditions being expressed in music, of the pride that we saw on the t-shirts, the playfulness and the fun on some of these products that are so kitschy. And I realized that it's really all coming from a place of what you could call a reverent irreverence. So it's an irreverence, but it's really coming from a place of really loving being Jewish. And we're going to see some more examples of what that means in the pages of Cool Jew. So this is what one of the frontispieces looks like in the book. One of my ideas was to help promote Jewish literacy. So these pages incorporate a lot of different icons of Jewish life beyond the star, right? We all know that the Jewish star is a Jewish symbol, but there's so many others. There is the color blue, the tchelet. There is the seven-branched menorah, which is what represents Jewish nationhood. There's the Hebrew letters themselves. There's the Torah. There's a rabbi with tzitzit and a manischewitz bottle that's been morphed into a champagne bottle that he's popping. You see the cork flying over the aleph at the top. And there's even a remez here to that concept of Or Zarua LaTzadik, that the sun is shining on the righteous as that sunburst is rising over the Torah. So the first chapter of Cool Jew is all about identity. The next chapter is From Bris to Beyond, Life Cycle. The third is the gear guide, which includes a lot of food because that's always been our favorite accessory. The fourth is holidays. The fifth is spirituality. The sixth is diversity because we are a very diverse people. And the seventh is language. And I'm often asked, well, what makes a cool Jew? So one of the ways you know you're a cool Jew is if you speak with great emotion, irreverence, conviction, good humor, and, of course, Jew-sticulation. You know you're a cool Jew if your food pyramid, your daily nutritional guide, is actually many pyramids that form a Magen David, and they're filled with many Jewish favorites, including gefilte fish, also known as fish spam. You know you're a cool Jew if you recycle, reuse, and reschmooze matzo balls and turn them into adorable earrings. And you know you're a cool Jew if you can make this symbol, the sign of the Kohenic blessing. And some of you may know that the character Spock on the show Star Trek introduced this image to the show. During the filming of the first episode where they land on the planet Vulcan, they asked him, as an actor, how would you like to greet, you know, your people? They had no greeting planned. And he said, we have to have a way. You know, Japanese bow, Vulcans have to do something. So he came up with this because he grew up in a traditional Jewish home. And he remembers this great drama of the Kohenic blessing. And you can actually hear him speak about it in his own words on YouTube. But take it from me, Spock was more Heapster than Vulcan. I always like to take a moment during this presentation and acknowledge my family history, because I would never have embarked on this project or all the things that led me to it if I hadn't come from a home where my Jewish identity was really, our Jewish identity, I should say, as a people, was really celebrated. This is an image from my father's family. My father is the young man, I have to admit, he looks a little spooked. His eyes look a little tense in the upper right-hand corner, and that's because this image was taken very late in the 30s, and one family member is already missing. One of my uncles had already left to go to Eretz Yisrael. He made Aliyah with the Youth Aliyah program. Some of you are familiar with it. He moved to a kibbutz and served in the Haganah and later the Jewish Brigada, the Jewish Brigade. And the man in the left-hand corner escaped to Sweden. The woman on the right escaped also with Youth Aliyah, and she lived out the rest of her life at Kibbutz Givat Chaim. May she rest in peace. That's my aunt Fela. My uncle Nat is seated in the lower right. He actually escaped with this photo, and that's why it's in the poor condition that you see here with all these wrinkles and the fold down the center and that even that fold in the left-hand side of the page that's diagonal. My uncle Nat folded it and hid it in his shoe, and that's how he was able to bring this first to Panama and later to California. My grandparents you see seated here, and the younger man is... he's my Uncle Lippmann, who I'm named for. And the woman who has her hands around them so lovingly, all four of them were killed in the Shoah. Only my dad, who was among the five who remained in Europe, in Nazi-occupied Europe, survived. And this is a picture of my father and I, and me, I should say, in more recent years. And I'd like to acknowledge my father's influence on me because he really is a hero of mine. I look up to him greatly, and I enjoy sharing all of this with him. I believe that we go through life with a sort of wake behind us. It's an invisible wake. For some of us, sometimes what we leave behind, our actions or our contributions, are much more visible than others. But my dad's are two slogans that I like to think are waving on this invisible banner that he walks with through life. One of them is never give up. On April 9th, 1945, my father was enslaved in Buchenwald. And he saw the American tanks approaching. He thought it was some kind of strange mind game that the Nazis were playing on the inmates. He saw the tanks approaching, and then he saw them turn around and turn their cannons away from the camp as if to protect it. And he momish couldn't comprehend that it was for the good. There was a chaplain in that unit. It was General Patton's, a troop led by General Patton, a famous American commander, and he his name is Rabbi Herschel Schachter. He's still alive today, and he came with a bullhorn and noticed that all of these inmates were in shock, and they actually weren't accepting that the war was over. And he announced to them in Yiddish, "You can trust me. I'm a rabbi. Ihr seid frei. You are free." And many of them rushed Rabbi Schachter, and they kissed his boots. And my father wasn't well enough to even walk that far. He had some sticks that were like crutches for him. And much more recently, really fast forward 50 years or so, my father and I had the pleasure of meeting Rabbi Schachter again. And my father said, "I've been waiting 50 years to tell you thank you." It was a very powerful moment. And the other message that I really see on my father's actions, the way he's led his life, is never be ashamed to be a Jew. He had every reason to hide his Jewish identity. He did, in some ways, at first hide it when he got to America. He called himself Ed Plug instead of his given name, Ezra Klug, which he very soon after started to embrace again with a lot of Jewish pride. That's my dad's family. This is a picture of my mother's family. My mother's mother, in fact. I was walking in Nachlaot, you know, in the neighborhood, that historic neighborhood in Yerushalayim, just 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And I knew that my grandmother was from Yerushalayim, but I didn't know what neighborhood. And I'm walking along, and I told a friend, you know, during the course of this year, a friend of mine sent me an email with some images from Nachlaot asking me if these Alkalis, which is my mother's family, my mother's father's family, are related. And I had heard from a historian of Sephardic Jewish history that all Alkalis are related, that were probably part of a large clan that left Spain at the time of the Inquisition and spread all across the Mediterranean. But what I didn't know is that among those images of Alkalis posted on the walls of Nachlaot is also the image of my grandmother's family, the Levy family. You see pictured here Yitzhak and Leah Levy, and that's my grandmother in the lower right-hand corner. And the little girl that she's holding is her niece, Esther, who's still alive in Tel Aviv today. She's in her 70s. And it was a very powerful moment for me, where I felt, like we say about Yaakov, shunifga b'makom, like the place really hit me. And I like to share these images because it's all part of what made me take a lot of pride and what also motivated me to learn a lot more about where we come from. And I really feel that that is all part of what it means to embrace who we are as Jews. And I encourage all of you to, although you're probably here, so you're already probably doing this, but also to look into that and see what information you can gather about your background that you'll find meaningful today. So in addition to cataloging Jewish pop culture and emphasizing Jewish pride, like in the stories that I just shared with you, Cool Jew does something else. It also spoofs a book called The Preppy Handbook, which about 25 years ago was a huge hit in the United States. And you can still get The Preppy Handbook today, but it doesn't sell for $4.95, as it shows in the upper right-hand corner. It now sells for $15 on eBay or used on Amazon. And it's the strangest thing, because a book that is that old doesn't normally sell for that price so many years later. And the reason why it does is because it's still a hit. It's like an underground manual that shows you how to get by in WASP culture. So it teaches you the ins and outs of the Ivy League and the corporate world, like, for example, what to wear to work. So the preppy handbook shows you to crease your pants, wear your Brooks Brothers suit, carry the proper briefcase, all that stuff. Well, in the Heapster handbook, you don't need to be that formal. You could just come as you are and load Eden Reichel on your oipod. In the preppy handbook, you'll learn how to display the loot, your crystal, your porcelain, your silver, all the stuff that you get when you get married. But it doesn't compare to what we do. If you took all the Judaica you need to lead a Jewish life that you probably already have in your home, extra bonus points for the Torah there, but you have all this other stuff. You have all this other stuff, and if you put it on your dining room table, we would all have a sisterhood gift shop right there. And the preppy handbook shows you the proper cuff to put on your pants and the monogrammed button to put on your blazer. The Heapster handbook shows you the lid on a yid, all the different headwear that we have for men and for women. We just lost a slide there again. Sorry about that. The preppy handbook shows you what you might look like later in life with your vineyard vine pants and your Lily Pulitzer skirt. Well, if you're among us, you might just frum out and look more like this. The preppy handbook shows you what to serve at your tailgate parties, your roasted turkey and your brie, your gin and tonic, even what the dog should wear. It's nothing compared to what we serve because, that's not fair. I'm so sorry. There's this great picture there of everything that we serve. And it shows all the food that we serve at all our many different events. And in the corner, there's this tiny little blank table. That's Yom Kippur. Oh, okay. Do you have tailgating in the UK?
No.
Okay, so tailgating is when you go to an American football game. Our version of football, not soccer. Yeah, American football. And you pull up with your car loaded with food, and you drop the back gate. It's called the back door of your big sedan, like your station wagon like this. You drop the back door, and you make a table out of it. That's called tailgating. And it's a big tradition in this kind of world back east in the fall. Now, in the preppy handbook, you learn about the prep colors, the virtues of pink and green. Those are not our colors. We have no colors. This is a diagram where you color by number, and there's really no color. It's just two Hasidim in their black and white finery. Now, you'll learn other things in this book, like the Heapster Hustle. You'll learn about actual items people are driving around with on their cars. This license plate says Hebro. You'll learn about events like the Purim Palooza. There's our friend Rabbi Langer again in the lower right. There's Perry Peretz Farrell, the lead singer of Jane's Addiction. Anyone recognize that name? And in the center, there's Matis Yahu, who performed at this event a few years ago. At the Purim Palooza in San Francisco, you would see costumes like the Overpartied Girl. That's my personal favorite. And a frequent costume that I employ year after year. And then there is the Hasidic pop culture icon. So you just rent a costume, any costume of a pop culture character, like Big Bird in this case. You throw on a tallit katan and you're good to go. Now, this is something I call Welcome to the Journiverse. When I first came out with the book, I was sent to audition to something called the Jewish Book Council in the United States. Do you have something akin to that in the UK? No? So what the Jewish Book Council does is it promotes all these Jewish book festivals. And November is Jewish Book Month in the United States. And so they give you 2 minutes. You've got 200 representatives of different venues in the United States, like JCCs and synagogues and book fairs. And you have 2 minutes to give the spiel about your book and hopefully get some invites to share your story with the different communities. So you have this very limited time. So this is a little sample, like a little overview of what's in the book. Jew got questions, Jew got answers. Did you know Elvis was a Jew, Barbie too, and that the English language is filled with words from Yiddish and Hebrew? Did you know Jews invented jeans, records, the remote control, Superman, shopping carts, the polio vaccine, and a whole slew of other wonderful things? Jew can discover how to speak Yiddish in seconds or how to fake it. Ways to master true chutzpah and what I call the art of the schnorr. How to pimp your ride, Heap style. where to find the hippest threads, hats, and bling, Kabbalala for non-dummies, the Heapster Jukebox, which again we'll explore tomorrow night at 8:30, and where to find the coolest Jewish festivals, including Limud, in your neck of the woods and around the world. You'll also learn how to make a mani, a Manischewitz cocktail, Manischewitz flavored Mount Sinai cloud cover, and a whole host of other original Manischewitz recipes that I concocted while sober. You'll learn things like how to say the Shema, the central prayer in Judaism. Heapsters make the letter shin when they say the Shema. And you'll learn which pop culture characters actually know the Shema too. You might be very surprised in the Fantastic Four, The Thing, originally known as Ben Grimm. Ben comes across one of his friends, Shek. He's dying, and Ben Grimm says, "The Thing, there's nothing I can do." Well, maybe there's one thing. He can pronounce God's oneness in the world. And there you have it, Shema Yisrael in the pages of an American comic book. Now, something else that I like to do in the book is I show you everything that's Jewish that you may not really have considered being Jewish, like certain letters of the alphabet, certain landmarks, certain cars, vegetables and fruits, and animals. So I think the giraffe is very Jewish. Doesn't that look like your bookkeeper or your brother-in-law or your ex-boyfriend? It does to me. There's the rhino. Look at him. He's so short and squat and cute. He's got that big nose. He's all wrinkly. He's Jewish. There's the zebra. The zebra is like a walking talus. Jewish. Shofar, so good. The antelope, kosher, shofar wrote right there. The koala, does that not look like my dad? This little guy, Jewish! Look at that face, Jewish! Now, the gorilla is not Jewish. The gorilla is fierce, he's threatening, he's angry, he's a murderer. Not Jewish. However, King Kong, at the top of the Empire State Building, alienated, scared, having a tantrum with his shiksa girlfriend? Jewish. I like to call this National Geographic Presents the March of the Hasidim. And last but not least, this is the push me pull you. Two minds, one body, the Tevye of the jungle. We're almost at the end of my presentation. We have a few. We'll have a few minutes for questions, but I want to share something with you that I did unconsciously when I wrote the book, and that was I wanted to thank in my acknowledgments all the people who helped me grow Jewishly, many teachers that I've had, all kinds of ways that I felt my identity strengthened, things that I learned about being Jewish, people who taught me by example, by hosting me in their homes on Shabbat or Chagim, all kinds of ways. And then, of course, I wanted to thank the ultimate author of all, as Rabbi David Aaron taught me, the ultimate author of all, of course, Hashem. And I borrowed this line from the end of the Hanukkah blessings, which we just said recently. And I love this line. It just felt like it embodied everything I wanted to convey. It says, "Kedei lehodotu lehalel l'shimcha hagadol, al nisecha va'al nifloetecha va'al yeshuetecha." In order to thank and to praise your great name for your miracles, for your wonders, and for your redemption. Well, anybody who's tried to publish a book knows that getting it finally done is a redemptive process. But it was more than that. I really wanted to express my gratitude. That's in the very beginning of the book. At the end of the book, my publisher, you're like done with everything at this point. You're done with the text, you're done with the images, you're done with the layout, everything's done. And then, oh, hello, we need a back cover. So she asked me, my editor, to come up with some photographs that were already in the book that I wanted to pull out and put on the back of the book. This is what the back of the book looks like. You see that tiny little Hanukkah there? This is the Hanukkah that my family lit when I was growing up. You saw my dad, and you might imagine he has a strong Yiddish accent, and when he sings Ma Utsur, it's with such reverence, like he's singing the national anthem. It's really a very sweet memory that comes back to me when I look at this Hanukkah, which my uncle who made it to Eretz Yisrael brought to us on a later visit in the United States. So that's on the back of the book. And then I realized what I had done unconsciously. I had created bookends. The beginning of the book, the Hanukkah blessing. The back of the book, the Hanukkah in its full glory, Zot Hanukkah. And I realized what I'd done is I created bookends for the book that represent what the book is really about, because Hanukkah is about the fight against assimilation, which is really the key message of being a cool Jew. So I'm going to leave you with these words. What does it really mean to be a cool Jew? Knowing where you come from, who you are, and having pride in your heritage is so cool. And when you're a heapster, you don't have to work hard to be cool. You just got to be Jew. Jew and 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 Jew. Thank you so much. I'm going to make a few more plugs here. I already told you we have tomorrow night the Heapster Jukebox Live, which is going to be really special. We have some special guest performers. I do have that newsletter list going around if you'd like to sign up. And I have some books here for sale, a couple of books, and I have a couple of Heapster t-shirts. The book is also being sold in the bookstore, so feel free to get it there. And if you would like me to sign a copy for you, I'm going to head over there next. I'd be happy to do that if you'd like it for you or for a gift for anybody. And if you see me any other time during conference and you wanted a book, don't hesitate. And I also have some fun gear available at cafepress.com/cooljewbook. You can get that Cool Jew necklace now on a t-shirt for your dog or for yourself, on an apron, a beer stein. There's all kinds of stuff there. And we have a few minutes left. I'd be happy to take some questions. Yes?
A lot of your imagery was reminiscent of the Jewish catalogue, which was very popular in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. Were you influenced by that at all?
I definitely was influenced by the Jewish catalog. I remember it as a child. I have an older sister who loved those books. She had all three volumes, and somewhere along the line, I hopped one of them, and it was in my possession when I came up with the idea for the book and as I wrote the book, and I was very inspired by it. And many other people have recognized that in some ways this is like a 21st century version of the Jewish catalog, but with a little bit of a hip-hop vibe and a lot more irreverence. The times have really changed. If you compare my book to that book, there's playfulness in the Jewish catalog, but there's nowhere near as much reverent irreverence. Any other questions? Yes?
I saw last week the film A Serious Jew.
Oh, by the
Cohen. No, in Israel it's called a Dukinos.
Yeah, by the Cohen brothers.
Yeah. Anyway, right. So I saw it, and it's got lots of this. These images, but kind of with all the joy and coolness shaken out of them, perhaps. And I wonder if you've seen the films, and it's rather a different take on some of the same material.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say I haven't seen the film. It's been a busy time for me, but there's no excuse really, especially you're saying that. I should take a look at it. But one of the reasons I didn't want to see it, actually, is because I had heard that in some ways it's very derogatory. Did you find that?
I wouldn't say derogatory, but it was pretty, it was harrowing.
It was harrowing. Yeah.
It was a portrait of Judaism in the, what was it, the '50s in Midwest USA. So actually, derogatory or not, it was like a very.
It was realistic to the time.
Picture of what it looked, of what that Judaism looked like. Mm-hmm. There.
So I'd like to take a look at it. Thank you for suggesting it. Any other questions? Yes?
I think a lot of what you said appears in the film The Hebrew Hammer.
Well, The Hebrew Hammer was also very much influenced for me. If you look through the book, there are stills that I received with licensing permission from The Hebrew Hammer. If you haven't seen The Hebrew Hammer, some of the parts of the film are very explicit, but it's really a lot of fun and very playful in this way. And you do see him, like, pimping his ride, heapster style. And those words aren't used, but the concept is. And I do play with some of those ideas, and I had the pleasure of meeting John Kesselman, the director of the film. He lives, of course, in the United States, and he is now looking to do a sequel, actually. That's even more in your face. So, anybody else? Yes?
I think we ought to at least acknowledge that your book was a finalist for the National Jewish Book Award last year.
Thank you, Paul.
Which is very nice.
Paul, I've had the pleasure of just meeting here at Limud, and he informed me that he's on the council committee.
On the council, I'm on the board of the Jewish Book Council.
But without him, I came up with that whole Jewish Book Council section. I always acknowledge it because the Jewish Book Council was pivotal in helping me bring this message and bring the book to many different places around the United States. And I'm indebted to the council, and I was very honored when the council announced that the book was a finalist in the Jewish Book Awards, which are like the Jewish Pulitzers in the United States. It's a very nice honor, and it was the first time I was told in the 50-year history of the awards that a humor book was included. And I hope it won't be the last. Anybody else? I am already actually working on my next book, I'm happy to say. And if you stay in touch with me on the newsletter list, I'll be happy to let you know. If you ever feel like visiting, cooljewbook.com is my website. It was up when you were coming in. And there'll be news about the new title when it comes out. Right now, we're hoping for 2011. Yes?
Have you done much investigating into Jews in English? Because I feel like we're much less confident in being kind of out in the...
This is like my field research right here. I'm doing my field research among the cool Jews here.
It's so different. So we're looking at the Jewish American culture and the British... The British Jewish culture and the American Jewish culture, it's very different. It's very interesting to see what the British take would be on something like
that. What are some of the ways, in anyone, please feel free to chime in, that you would characterize the British Jewish community or culture?
Apologetic.
Embarrassed to show. Well, you know, I from what I've been told, you have much more overt anti-Semitism here. Do you think that that's a response to that? No?
It's a very different... communities express themselves much more in America than they do in Europe, generally. Communities are allowed to express themselves more.
Do you think that's because of the anti-Semitism?
No, it's because of the way the society is built. The way the American society is built by... many communities living.
We also have a stronger separation of church and state in the United States.
But British people are much more reserved. It's not just about being a British Jewish community. British people are much more reserved than American people. And that is why British Jewry is more
reserved. You don't say they're an overachiever. You don't go out and say,
I see.
He was in a group of, like, you know, Jewish British or, you know, Muslim, but people want to come under the term British as opposed to say I'm an Afro-American or I'm a, you know, Japanese-American. You don't kind of incorporate your culture in your statement of your nationality.
Right. We sort of take on that Israeli concept of the salad bowl versus the melting pot. We used to be melting pot, right? And now we're salad bowl, where we're all part of this whole, but we want to honor and express our own identity. And I have been asked many times, why do I feel like this trend has been unfolding? And I think it's because we've really been the beneficiaries of what you could call a general acceptance of minorities and other groups that have been previously oppressed. My favorite example is quite different from our experience, but 10 years ago, let's say, the gay community had so much more stigma than it has today. So 10 years ago or so, when Ellen DeGeneres came out in her show, she was fired. This year, Ellen DeGeneres married Portia de Rossi in California for the short window we had where gay marriage was allowed, and they were on the cover of People magazine. So she went from being fired for being outed to being the host now of an extremely successful show that competes against Oprah and on the cover of a magazine that appeared in grocery stores across the United States. So dramatic sea change. And I think that, like the Hobbs deal, we don't have the same issues as homosexuals have in America or any place, but we've benefited from this more openness, this greater acceptance, this willingness to say, I'm this part of the salad, and so on. Anybody else? Well, I really want to thank you. You're a great audience. Thank you so much. Have a great time while you move.